Oh, the hiatus is over. The studio is still here. Boy, I like a good routine. Without a good routine, you end up not showering until 7 p.m. or later, or perhaps not at all, and not shaving, perhaps not at all. But now we're back in the groove, and the good news is I will now shave on a more regular basis. And I'll be talking NFL on a more regular basis, at least in this context. We've been updating the website all throughout our three-week hiatus, but we're back now, and there's plenty to talk about. And the big story still continues to resonate from last week, the Ray Rice suspension. Everybody's got an opinion on it. Most of the opinions are that the NFL did not go far enough. Well, I don't want to spend too much time talking about something that's already been churned and churned and churned some more. I'm trying to spin this thing forward, and I'm trying to find an explanation in the Ray Rice suspension unrelated to Ray Rice per se. And here's what I mean by that. This suspension comes at a time when the NFL is reportedly weighing a suspension of an owner, specifically Colts owner Jim Irsay. And we know that whatever happens to Irsay is going to be compared to what has happened to players. And the most recent player that it's going to be compared to, because it would fall kind of under the personal conduct policy, because owners don't fall under the substance abuse policy, which DUI arrests ordinarily would fall under, we're going to look at Ray Rice. Personal conduct policy, personal conduct policy. By going easy on Ray Rice, or at least easier than most people, if not everyone not connected to the NFL believes the league did go on Rice, you lay the foundation to go easy on Irsay. Because if you suspended Rice 4 games, 6 games, 8 games, and then Irsay gets a slap on the wrist, it's more glaring. With Rice being suspended only 2 games, if Irsay gets suspended 4 games or 6 games or 8 games, the NFL will hope at that point that we can put to bed once and for all the notion that owners enjoy a better standard, more favorable treatment than players. Now, I'm curious if there's any merit to this, and who the hell knows if there is. I'm curious if this is a one-time thing aimed at laying the foundation for the Irsay punishment, or whether the owners of the NFL, who ultimately are the NFL, have decided, you know what, this whole let's be tough on players thing, now we see how that can be used against us. Because if we're going to say that we're individually held to a higher standard, if any of us get in any trouble whatsoever of any kind, we're going to be expected to give ourselves a punishment, because that's really what it is. When the commissioner punishes an owner, it's the NFL punishing itself. It's one of its owners punishing another one of its owners, or I guess more accurately, all of its owners acting via the representative they've hired in Roger Goodell. So they all now see what could happen to any of them. Now, some of the owners may look at it and say, well, we'll never do something as stupid as Jim Irsay did, but you just never know. And what better way to avoid ever putting yourself in a situation where you may get a huge punishment for something that otherwise would be brushed under the rug if we start scaling back the punishment that is imposed on players. Now, that only applies under the personal conduct policy, because the other policies out there, performance enhancing drug policy, substance use policy, it's formulaic. There's a process. There's a step-by-step, especially under the substance abuse policy. There are multiple steps before you get a suspension. It'd be interesting to see whether more discretion is exercised in those cases. Will Josh Gordon, for example, get less than a 1-year suspension? All to create this idea that owners and players are treated the same, and let's treat players a little more easily so we can treat the owners easily when the owners get in trouble. Just a thought, just a theory. Tried to find something, anything that hasn't already been discussed. But I want to spin this forward, and I think that maybe at some level the NFL thinking about the punishment for Irsay, thinking that in a roundabout way, this helps with the broader goal of convincing everyone that owners are held to a higher standard, even if they aren't. Justin Blackmon, the Jaguars receiver, in that same mechanism that is now consuming Josh Gordon, Darryl Washington, the Cardinals, already suspended for a year. Blackmon hasn't been suspended for a year per se, but Blackmon is in a position where he's suspended. No one knows when he's going to come back, and now he's had an arrest in the past few days for marijuana possession. And remember, when a guy's suspended, he is subject to up to 10 tests per month. You've got to stay clean or you're not getting back in. Justin Blackmon's effort to get back into the NFL complicated significantly by last week's arrest. So why in the world would owner Shad Khan, on the heels of that arrest, say that the team isn't going to cut Justin Blackmon? Why would the Browns, through owner Jimmy Haslam, say they're not going to cut Josh Gordon? And look, I want to give the NFL's owners credit where they deserve it. There's a certain amount of hope that goes with being a Justin Blackmon and a Josh Gordon and knowing that you've got a job waiting for you if you can stay clean long enough to get reinstated. That's the key. So regardless of what happens with Justin Blackmon or Josh Gordon, if he gets kicked out of the league, he's going to have to stay clean for a whole year, a minimum of a year, in order to get reinstated. Blackmon, who knows what he has to do at this point. But knowing that there's hope, knowing that there is a path back to gainful employment, that could be something, that could be a factor, and at some level, in some degree, in some way, it could be a difference maker for Justin Blackmon and for Josh Gordon. I want to bring this back to Ursay, because Lavon Brazil, receiver of the Colts, has been suspended for a year, and the Colts cut him just like that. There's no reason to. He doesn't count against your 90-man roster. You're not paying him. There's no stigma attached. My gosh, I mean, if this guy has the disease of addiction that Jim Irsay has talked about so openly and that we need to not stigmatize addiction, why are you firing the guy? Of all teams in the NFL that should not be firing a player who's been suspended for a year, it's the Indianapolis Colts. But then again, Lavon Brazil does not possess the talents of a Josh Gordon or a Justin Blackmon, which brings us all back to Ray Rice, which explains why the Ravens didn't cut Ray Rice and why the Ravens support Ray Rice, because they perceive that he can play. And this takes us all the way back to last Monday when everything got off the rails when Tony Dungy tried to explain why Michael Sam of the St. Louis Rams could be a distraction, and it's that sliding scale. If Michael Sam, a seventh-round pick on the roster bubble, coming in with the Oprah Winfrey card in his back pocket and maybe a reality show and all this other stuff, a certain level of talent does not justify worrying about issues unrelated to football. A certain amount of talent on the other end of the spectrum, you'll tolerate those issues. Maybe that's why the Colts turned their back on Lavon Brazil. But everything from the last week kind of all interconnects, and it looks at the broader psychology of the NFL. Bottom line is, if you can play, you got a job. And I still have a job, at least for now, and maybe it's good I've been off the last 3 weeks because I had a chance to think about what I was going to say about these issues before I pull a Stephen A. Smith. Another guy who has a job, although we don't know whether or not he's going to play, is Johnny Manziel of the Cleveland Browns. And look, we were off when the whole rolled-up dollar bill picture came out, and I'm grateful for that in hindsight because, again, who the hell knows what I would have said contemporaneously with the release of that picture. But it appears, even though no one with the Browns will talk about the rolled-up dollar bill, Johnny Manziel evasive about it. Mike Pettine, the head coach, admitted that he has spoken to Manziel about that photo. The Browns reportedly alarmed by Manziel's antics. It's all in the past now. It's all behind them. He's moving forward, yada, yada. And even though the other teams out there that would have been interested in Johnny Manziel should be possibly breathing a sigh of relief in the wake of what's happened since he's been drafted, not Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones keeps talking about how he almost drafted Johnny Manziel. He said on NFL Network yesterday that he was that close to drafting Johnny Manziel. Why would you keep talking about this? What message does that send to your current quarterback, Tony Romo? And you know what? Maybe that's the message Jerry Jones intends to send. Maybe that's why he's talking about how close he came to drafting Johnny Manziel. Maybe this is Jerry Jones' passive-aggressive way of letting Tony Romo know that it's up or out this year, that he better turn it around. That, you know what? They can't do anything to erase that big contract they gave Romo last year. The cap hit would be too big. They've made too much of an investment. But with each passing year, it gets a little bit easier under the salary cap to make a move. And with each passing year, maybe Tony Romo will no longer be throwing passes for the Dallas Cowboys. Because that's really the message when you consider what Jones is saying. He's so smitten with a guy on whom the jury is out as to whether or not he's going to be a good NFL quarterback. You're not smitten with a guy like that if you're still in love with your current quarterback. If you have a true franchise quarterback, you don't care about Johnny Manziel or Teddy Bridgewater or Blake Bortles or any other rookie quarterback. You've got your guy, and you're committed to him for the long term, and you expect he's going to be there for the long term. So it bears watching, especially if the Cowboys struggle as much this year as a lot of people think they will. 8-8 the last three seasons, right at 500 since 1997. I think it'll be a tall order to even get to 500 this year. We'll see whether or not they can do it. So much more to talk about. So good to be back. And when we come back from our first break, post-hiatus, Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News to get us up to speed on the Jets. A lot of optimism oozing out of New York. We'll get all the latest on the Jets with Manish, and then we'll get all the latest from you. We've got your Twitter questions. We're going to open the phone lines. It's been a while. I've missed talking to you. Hopefully, you've missed talking to me. Just A little bit. We'll find out who calls, who doesn't call to wrap up the show. Before that, we will be calling Manish Mehta. He'll be with us after the break. This is PFT Live. You know, he looks a lot different than he used to, but Jets coach Rex Ryan sounding more and more like the guy that we came to know and love back in 2010 when the Jets were on Hard Knocks. A lot of optimism, not just from Rex, but it's trickled down to the roster. Joining us now to give us an accurate gauge of where this Jets team is, our good friend Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News. And let's start with Rex. Manish, how surprised are you that we're kind of starting to see Rex come back out of his shell again after kind of spending last year keeping his mouth shut for the most part?
Well, Mike, it was probably only a matter of time. The first year with John Idzik, he was clearly more buttoned up than he had been in previous years. And, you know, rightfully so, because the team hadn't done particularly well. But apparently, you know, an 1-8-8 season can do wonders for your confidence. But, I like the fact that he is being more, like himself, like we were used to. Even though he's probably still the most outwardly confident coach in the league, he still doesn't rival what he used to be back in 2009 and 2010 and 11 when he was predicting Super Bowls. So you're definitely seeing what I think is the quote-unquote real Rex Ryan as opposed to what you saw for much of last season.
And even though he isn't quite back to where he was in 2009, 2010, Manish, the players seem to be a lot more confident than they were in the past. You've got several guys saying some fairly outlandish things, and where do we start? How about with the quarterback that played up the road at West Virginia, Geno Smith? He's going to be a top five quarterback. Does anyone agree with that assessment anywhere?
Probably not. Look, I think he said within a year or two he'd be considered one of the top five quarterbacks. You know, I assume he thinks that Brady, Manning, Breeze, Aaron Rodgers, all those guys will be retired by then. But look, you have to like the confidence that he thinks he's better than the worst quarterback in the league. And that's really what his response was to. He was ranked in an ESPN poll that cited coaches, general managers, people in the league as the 32nd quarterback in the league. And I don't think he's the worst quarterback in the league. I certainly don't think he's a top five quarterback, but he thinks he's headed in the right direction. Clearly, that's an overstatement, but that seems to be par for the course, at least up here in Cortland for the past few days with this team.
And, you know, Manish, just when we thought that we had a clear picture of the competition that really isn't a competition between Geno Smith and Mike Vick, GM John Idzik comes in and screws it all up again, creating the impression that there really is a competition, even though there apparently isn't. What's your best read on Smith versus Vick?
Well, it's Geno Smith's job. It's really always been Geno Smith's job since the season ended, since they beat Miami down there. And when they brought in Mike Vick, he was going to be an insurance policy, really an emergency escape hatch, if you will, if Geno Smith really goes into the tank or gets injured. You know, they've got a guy who's got a proven record of winning in this league and being successful in this league that they can turn to. But it was never a quarterback competition. It was puzzling that John Idzik a few days ago up here in Cortland said that the competition is not tilted toward Geno Smith, because it clearly is. And when you look at these first four practices, Geno has gotten more than three quarters of the reps with the first team, as Marty Morningwig said would be the case earlier this offseason. And even Mike Vick said the other day that, you know, it is difficult for him to get some kind of rhythm with the starting wide receivers, Eric Decker, Jeremy Curley, the tight end, because it's rare that he gets those first-team snaps. He's really getting, you know, a handful of first-team snaps each practice. I mean, you can't really develop any kind of cohesion, chemistry, camaraderie with the starters if you're going to be playing, you know, that limited with the first team. So it's not a competition. It's puzzling to me why the GM just doesn't come out and say that Geno Smith is our starting quarterback until further notice. But that seems to be the way he approaches things. Everything's a competition. Everything's open for debate, even when everybody else knows that it's not.
We opened the segment with sound from Coach Rex Ryan talking about how he loves his four quarterbacks currently on the roster. When it's time to trim the roster down, who do you think stays? Who do you think goes?
Well, clearly Geno Smith and Michael Vick will be one and two. I think Matt Sims will be the number three quarterback. Best bet is, you know, they cut Taj Boyd, he clears waivers, and they can bring him back on the practice squad. But let's see how these preseason games go. Maybe Taj Boyd will open some eyes and outplay Matt Sims. The smart money is that Matt Sims is going to win that third job, and he's clearly better than Taj Boyd right now. And you'd expect that, of course, going up against the rookie transitioning from that offense that they had in Clemson. But I would suspect that it would be Geno 1, Vic 2, Matt Sims 3, and maybe they could bring back Taj Boyd for the practice squad.
Any chance that they're so concerned that whoever they cut gets snatched up on waivers that they'd carry four quarterbacks on the 53-man roster?
I don't see that happening. I don't. The worst-case scenario, again, is that somebody would snatch up Taj Boyd. They can live with that. He was a late-round pick. But they would like to develop him if he could. And, again, he could open some eyes and play exceptionally well in the preseason, and Matt Sims could fall flat on his face, and then, you know, we'll have a different conversation. But, you know, I think they're thinking that Sims will be the number three guy. Because if you remember, Mike, Matt Sims was the number two guy for this team last year. So that would be an incredible fall from grace to go from the backup quarterback 1 year to not making the roster and losing out to a late-round rookie quarterback.
And Mike Vick, destined to at least be the backup this year, 34 years old. He recently said that while he would race former teammate in Philadelphia, LeSean McCoy, all over again, he wants no part of Chris Johnson, which tells me Chris Johnson is looking pretty good. What have you seen so far from the first-year Jets tailback?
Yeah, look, he looks fast, he looks quick, and they're going to put him on this rotation in which he'll have every third day off. So they've had four practices, two of them in pads. He's only participated in team drills in one of those padded practices. The other two were in shorts. But he does look pretty fast, pretty explosive, and you look at that in relation to the other running backs that they have on their roster. Obviously, it doesn't mean that much until you actually see him in live action, but it doesn't look like he has any ill effects from that meniscus repair that he had in the offseason. And I've said all along that I think that he's their starting running back if he is fully healthy. And that doesn't mean he's going to get 20, 25 touches a game, but I think he's going to be the guy who gets the most carries, most touches. They've flanked him out. They've tried to use him in space in the slot as a wide receiver to try to get him the ball in these early practices as often as possible. I think that's how they're going to use him, and I think they view him as their primary back if he's fully healthy.
Well, and we've seen Marty Morningweg in Philadelphia use LeSean McCoy as that bell cow, that workhorse. Is there a chance that because Johnson is producing at such a high level, if that does happen, that he's just the guy and they basically ride him till the wheels come off?
Well, I don't know if they want to do that, because if they do that, I think the wheels might come off in week 10 or 11. So he is a guy who's not on the wrong side of 30, but he's got a lot of mileage on him. And I think that even if he is performing well and playing at a high level, you still want to mix in Chris Ivory. Every now and then you want to mix in Bilal Powell just to keep Johnson fresh, if nothing else. So I don't think you're going to see the Jets wear him down, giving him 25 touches a game. But that doesn't mean that he won't get 25 touches in one particular game. I just don't see that happening week in and week out, because you do know that this guy has a lot of mileage on him, and you do want to make sure that he is fresh, especially if you need him for games down the stretch in November and December.
And as it turns out, that proclamation from Geno Smith that he's destined to be a top five quarterback, not the most outlandish thing a Jets player said this weekend. Cornerback Dean Milliner, not just top five, he's the best in the NFL. I like the confidence, but where's the line between confidence and delusion?
Well, look, I think, you know, in his heart of hearts, he knows he's not the best cornerback in the league. But I also think, and you just touched on this, that it's a good thing that he says this, because when you're a young player, especially at that position, you need to be confident. Really, any quarterback in this league needs to be confident. I think Rex hit the nail on the head yesterday when he said, if you don't have confidence at that position, you really have nothing. You have to have a short memory, and you have to think you're the best. And I think if you ask guys around the league, there's plenty of cornerbacks that probably think that they're the best at their position. And clearly, Dee Milliner's not there yet. And Rex Ryan understands that. I'm sure Dee Milliner's teammates understand that. But the idea that he's not willing to concede that top spot is an attitude that I think you want young players to have. And so I didn't really see anything wrong with it. I don't think he's delusional, and if he is delusional, it's probably a good type of delusional, if there is such a thing. But, you know, the reality, of course, is that he's not anywhere near where he needs to be, but he's got the pedigree, and we'll see, you know, what kind of jump he makes in his second season. Because if you remember, he was benched three times last year, but he did win Defensive Rookie of the Month in December, so he finished off pretty strong.
You know, it's a tough balance. Have a short memory, and if you don't have a short memory, you're going to get benched, which means you better have a long memory, because you better remember, well, I don't know, I've confused myself. I'm confused about how good the Jets are going to be on defense. Calvin Pace says they have the best defense in the NFL. I think the general consensus is maybe the defense took a little bit of a step back, but the offense has made up for it by improving. What's your overall read on the Jets' defense?
Well, the defensive line is one of the best in the league. I mean, probably a top five defensive line in the league, and you've got two of the great young players along that defensive line in Mo Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson, who are only going to get better. You've got an extremely underrated young player in Damon Harrison. So that is clearly the strength of not only the defense but the entire team. The big question mark is that secondary. And Dee Milner comes into play. Calvin Pryor, their rookie safety who actually suffered a concussion the other day, he comes into play. And their coverage skills as a unit on the back end is going to be pivotal, because if they can't get to the quarterback consistently, and they've had some problems in that area. Now, they're incredibly stout against the run, but if they can't get to the quarterback consistently, that could expose some holes on the back end. And really, that's going to tell you how good this defense is ultimately going to be, because if they're getting beat over the top, as they did, you know, time and time again last season, they're not going to be, forget about top defense in the league. I think that clearly belongs to Seattle, San Francisco. But if they get beat constantly on the back end, you know, they might not even be a top 10 defense.
You mentioned Mo Wilkerson, first-round pick in 2011, fifth-year option picked up, no new contract for him yet. He didn't hold out, but he clearly believes he's underpaid. Is there a timetable for getting him a new contract?
Look, I think the timetable is right after J.J. Watt gets his contract, and I think that, you know, makes the most sense from his standpoint. Clearly, you'd like to get paid now, and, you know, if you look at everything in a vacuum, the Jets probably should pay him. The smart business decision for the Jets, of course, is to wait. They don't have to pay him. They're only paying him $1 million or so. But if you look at how he can maximize his dollars, I think you wait until J.J. Watt sets the market. You know, you get an idea of what you can get, and then you come in, you know, shortly thereafter at a number shortly below, a little bit below that. So if you want to maximize your dollars in your Mo Wilkerson, you probably should wait until J.J. Watt signs a deal. But if you want to get, you know, a market friendly deal or team friendly deal, I should say, maybe you can sign right now. But right now there hasn't been much movement. The Jets have not made any kind of offer. You wouldn't expect them to at this point. And I think when it's all said and done, he's probably going to have to wait, just like everybody else in that class, it seems like, until after this season.
Best thing about training camp, it's the team equivalent of the pro day workout. Everybody looks great. If you don't look great, there's a huge problem. Everybody feels pretty good. No owner or coach or GM comes out and says, boy, we're just really going to suck this year. So all things considered, and given what you've seen so far, and given the moves the Jets have made, 8-8, do they match it, do they exceed it, or do they end up worse than that in 2014?
Well, let me preface it by saying I think they were more like a 6 or 7 win team than an 8 win team last year. I thought they got a couple quote-unquote fortunate breaks to finish at 500. I think they'll be a 9-7 team. Does that mean they're going to make the playoffs? That's really a 50-50 proposition. If you're 9-7, it could go either way. I don't think they're winning the division. I think that division clearly still belongs to New England. So that means the Jets are fighting with probably 5 or 6 quality teams for 2 wild card spots. I don't know if they're going to make it, but I do think that they can get 9 wins this season.
Well, we'll see what happens. It'll be one of the fun storylines. We like the fact that Rex Ryan is back to being Rex Ryan, that the Jets are brash, they're calling their shots, and we'll see whether they can deliver when the season gets rolling. Manish, I have a feeling we'll be talking to you before then. Thanks, as always, for your time. Enjoy training camp.
Thanks, Mike. Talk to you soon.
All right, there is Manish Mehta, New York Daily News, New York Jets. Very relevant. Whether they're good or bad remains to be seen, but after a couple of years of irrelevance, and I remember last year people thought they were going to be 2-14. They ended up 8-8. Will they be better than that this year? Hey, they're in that blender with everybody else. I like how the NFL Network is doing the Why Not Us, because that's really kind of how it is this year at this time of the year. Maybe not as much this year as in past years, because you still have to deal with the Seahawks at some point, but why not us? Why not the Jets? Why not any NFL team other than the Raiders, really. I'm being objective, Raiders fans. I know you don't like to hear it, but I don't think it's going to happen this year. Every other team, maybe it happens. Raiders, doesn't happen. What will happen after the break? It'll be time to hear from you. If you first pick up your cell phone device and dial the number that I'll try to remember without looking down, even though it's been 3 weeks and 4 days, 888-237-5269. Nailed it. 888-237-5269 is the number to call. We'll answer your questions via the Twitter and via the telephone when we return. This is PFT Live. It is great to be back right here on PFT Live, and it's great to be talking to you once again, whether it's answering questions that come in via Twitter or by phone. And it's time to answer the first Twitter question of the renewed PFT Live after our brief hiatus. How long? Just get to the question, Florio. How long do you think Marshawn Lynch will hold out or will he retire? That's one of the big stories right now, because we've got the Marshawn Lynch, will he or won't he hold out? Will he or won't he report? We went through the offseason wondering what he was going to do with that mandatory minicamp. At one point it looked like it wasn't going to show up. He did, then he doesn't show up for camp. Both sides seem to be dug in here, and the challenge is to find a middle ground, or the player just has to cave in at some point. We saw that 2 years ago with Maurice Jones-Drew of the Jacksonville Jaguars at the time, now with the Oakland Raiders. He held out deep into training camp, eventually folded the tents and showed up. I don't see Marshawn Lynch being wired that way. I don't see Marshawn Lynch. If he decides to do something, he's not going to change his mind. And that's not a slap at anybody else who has caved after a holdout, but they got to find a way to give him an olive branch. They got to find a way to move around money. They got to come up with something that looks like it's a raise, even if it isn't. Maybe push some of his 2015 money into 2014, maybe guarantee 2015. I think his concern is that at age 28, this is his last best opportunity to get paid, and that by next year, the Seahawks, who through Coach Pete Carroll have said a contract is a contract, may decide to rip up Marshawn Lynch's contract and make him a free agent, because maybe they decide by next year he doesn't have it anymore. That's the challenge. That's the concern. They got to find a middle ground, or they're going to move on with Kristen Michael, Robert Turbin, and anybody else that they may happen to get on the roster. They got to find a middle ground, or this thing could last a while. Okay, another Twitter question. Which means no phone calls yet, which means pick up your call and phone us, or pick up your phone and call us at a Red Zone Out. Is D. Milner the best cornerback in the AFC East, let alone the NFL? P.S. Glad you're back. Thank you, a Red Zone Out. We're glad to be back. Glad to be getting questions from you. I saw you were cheating on us during the break, asking questions of others that I happen to work with at Football Night America. We saw the Twitter handle at Peter King's website, but D. Milner, I don't know that he's even the best cornerback on his team. I mean, if Antonio Cromartie was still there, the answer would be he's not the best quarterback on his team. And he's in a challenge to show that he is the best Jets cornerback. We talked earlier with Manish Mehta about it. It's good to be confident. It's good to feel that you've got the abilities. It's good to have a short memory. That's part of the process of getting to the point where you are the best quarterback in the division or in the conference or in the NFL. But, yeah, I mean, it just sounds a little silly now. It's just cliche, it's rhetoric, it's pointless, and, you know, maybe it creates a backlash from which D. Milner draws even more motivation as more and more people say you're not the best cornerback in the league, the conference, the division, and possibly your team. Jared in Baltimore, the first caller since we're back from hiatus. You're on PFT Live. What's up, Jared?
Hey, what's going on, Mike? Glad to be back. Myers is kind of boring.
Great to have you around. It's been a good break, but it's great to have football back.
Right. And you already know why I got to ask about Johnny. I mean, all the reports, like following like Brown's camp and everything, all the reports saying Brown is something, yada yada. I mean, I understand, but like I said, like previously, like a couple months ago, I mean, you feel me? They're not gonna trade up to get somebody and not playing. You know what I'm saying? Like last camp, I remember it was all just talking about how North Turner was turning around Brandon Whedon and how he was looking great in the preseason and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm not really leaving none of that stuff until the preseason, because that's when you're really going to see Johnny. Like, if it was in pass today and everything. My question is, what do you think he has to do in the preseason to be the starter week one? Because I'm still anticipating for him to be the starter.
And, you know, I was too, Jared, until a couple of things happened. When he came out at the rookie symposium, he was very defiant that he's not going to change for anybody. The Browns reportedly want him to tone it down, and then the photo of the rolled-up dollar bill comes out just a few days after that. I think that's the point where the Browns, who are owned by a guy who likes to fire people, the Browns realize they can't fire him, but what they can do is take away his ability to play. And the Browns seem to be willing at this point to let Brian Hoyer play, even if that means Hoyer plays so well that they can't bench him for Manziel when Manziel is, in their mind, ready to go. And it gets back to the whole Derek Anderson-Brady Quinn thing, where Anderson ended up playing because Quinn held out in the training camp. He wasn't ready to go when they dumped Charlie Fry. Anderson played well, and then the following year they had a mess, and they still haven't recovered from it at the quarterback position. So I think that they're willing to go with Hoyer just because that seems to be the best way to send a message to Johnny Manziel that resonates not just for the rest of the month, but for the rest of the year. And beyond that. And Mike Pettine, the head coach, hinted last week at the possibility of having a specialty package for Johnny Manziel, which should make the Browns fans who all bought the number two jersey a little less unhappy if he's not playing. But I'm starting to think that Manziel's off-field antics have made it harder for him to be the starter. And with all that said, we still have yet to see the Browns put him out on the field in a preseason game behind a backup offensive line. If they do that, that tells me they really are serious about humbling this kid and making sure he gets it before he gets the starting job. Another Twitter question from @TheImpact99. Are there any pressing issues in New England, or are they set to take another division title? #BusinessAsUsual. I'll tell you what, if they had pressing issues on the roster, instead of using that late second-round pick to address one of those needs, they went for a quarterback who may never play during the 4 years that he's now under contract, because Tom Brady intends to keep playing for the next 4 years. Receiver continues to be a question mark. They're more like the teams that Tom Brady had with the no-name guys where he distributed the ball than they were like the team in 2007 that had Wes Welker and Randy Moss. There really isn't a game breaker. Kenbrell Tompkins, got to get the name right. Tompkins has looked good so far in training camp. He beat Darrell Revis the other day. I think the one thing we see on defense, there is an effort to get a little more physical with the receivers, like those old school Patriots defenses used to be with Ty Law. You've got Revis, you've got Brandon Browner. And I think the Patriots, you know, at a time when we think the Broncos and the Patriots are trying to one-up each other, I think both are thinking it doesn't matter if we can beat each other if we can't compete with the Seahawks. Or whoever the best team in the NFC is right now, and the best teams in the NFC are better than the best teams in the AFC. I think that that's what the Patriots are thinking about. That's why they got Browner. That's why they got Revis. They're thinking about rough and tumble old school football, because that allowed the Seahawks last year to climb the mountain, and that's kind of what the Patriots did when they won their first Super Bowl or two. It wasn't Tom Brady throwing for 5,000 yards. It was having a great defense. I think they're trying to get back to that. Michael in Ontario, welcome to PFT Live.
Hello. I was just wondering if I could get your AFC North division winner live.
I didn't hear that, but I think it was about the AFC North. The AFC North winner. Thank you. AFC North winner. I like either the Ravens or the Steelers right now. I'm not ready to make my final choice, and I will wait as long as I possibly can to make my preseason predictions, because who knows who's going to get injured? Who knows what's going to happen in training camp or the preseason? I think the run ends for the Cincinnati Bengals, both playoff appearances and last year's division title. I think it's going to be the Steelers or the Ravens. I'm in the process of figuring out which of those two I like. But I like either Steelers or Ravens first and second, Bengals third, Browns fourth. That's my loose prediction as of right now. Another Twitter question from @NotPerfectLibra. And the question is, will the Eagles receiving core be more efficient in 2014 and beyond? Well, look, they've had another year, a full year now, a full offseason on top of last year to get comfortable in Chip Kelly's system. And with each day, with each practice, with each rep, it's more time and more opportunity to get comfortable with Chip Kelly's way of doing things. With Riley Cooper, Jeremy Maclin healthy, tore that ACL in training camp last year. Jordan Matthews, a lot of hype at the receiver position. A lot of people think Zach Ertz could be a superstar in the league at tight end. Yeah, I think they're going to be better. See, that's the thing about the Eagles. Last year, no one knew what to expect, and they won the division. This year, I think they're better. This year, I think that, and again, I'm going to defer picking my official division winners as long as possible, but as of right now, I think the Eagles are going to win that division easily. The question is, do they have enough of a one-loss record that they force other teams like the Seahawks, 49ers, Saints to come to Lincoln Financial Field? Not that that helped last year, because the Eagles became the first team in NFL history to lose to the Saints at home in a playoff game. But I think the Eagles are going to be better across the board this year. It's going to be fun to watch, because I had doubts about Chip Kelly's ability to make a quick impact in the NFL, because he had no prior connection to the NFL. He has shown that he can. And now with another year, he could be a lot better, and the Eagles could be a lot better. Last call for the day goes to Jeff in Minnesota. Jeff, what's up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, good to have you.
Yeah. My question, you had touched base a little bit, but I read a report saying if Gronkowski comes back healthy, the Patriots could challenge the Broncos for, you know, the really good offenses in the AFC. But so since you already kind of covered that base, has the talks completely died with the Patriots and the Texans about getting Andre Johnson over there? because they could really use his help.
Yeah, I mean, it's done. Andre Johnson's all in with the Texans. Andre Johnson is going to stay there. They've resolved their differences. But, you know, with the Patriots and with Gronkowski, yeah, he's healthy. And unlike last year, remember last year, it was a weekly saga. Will he be ready to play after having three or four different surgeries on that arm that he broke, and then he came back and he broke it again? He had a staph infection, serious medical issues. It was well into the season, week five or six, by the time he was able to play. Now, coming off that ACL, he's cleared, he's ready, he'll be back week one. He's saying he's not changing his playing style. That's good news if he can stay healthy. The bad news is it exposes him to getting injured. And we saw him with that bad ankle in Super Bowl 46 against the Giants. And maybe if he didn't have that bad ankle, that remember that long pass Tom Brady threw? Maybe Gronkowski gets that instead of it being intercepted. Maybe it's a touchdown. Maybe it breaks the game open at that point. And if you have a healthy Gronkowski last year in the AFC title game, maybe the Patriots win that game. I think if Gronkowski can stay healthy all year, if he can have a year like he did in 2011 without the badly sprained ankle in the AFC title game, Patriots can get back to the Super Bowl. And with the improvements on defense, a healthy Vince Wilfork, a healthy Gerard Mayo, whom Bill Belichick has said is the key player on their team, so much for Tom Brady, this is a Patriots team. If they get some luck, if they get some breaks, if they avoid the medical kinds of breaks, they still, every year, they're knocking on the door or the plexiglass or whatever the case may be. We're done. Somebody's knocking on my door. I got to go answer it. Not really. I'm just trying to look for a way to wrap this thing up. It's been 3.5 weeks. I gotta get back on the horse. But we got through this one. We'll be back tomorrow. And quick programming note, later in the week, we're scheduled to take this show on the road down to White Sulphur Springs for a couple of days with the New Orleans Saints at training camp. I mean, there's an NFL training camp in West Virginia. I'm in West Virginia. I've got to go. We're going to go check it out later this week. But we're back right here tomorrow with another edition of PFT Live. And PFT on NBCSN is back. Join us tonight, Brian Westbrook and Kevin Gilbride in the studio. It's my first day back. Give me a break. We'll see you back here tomorrow with another edition of PFT Live. Thanks for joining us.